Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run. It's Monday and the 20th of October 2025. So we are in 2025. That means from this year moving forward, just one fun fact to throw in. I know it's too early, but I'm just gonna toss it in there. From 2025 moving forward, 2005 will be the year 2000 will always be far from us than 2050. So 2000 is always, from now moving forward to the year 2000 will always be far from us than 2050. So to, because, well, 50 divided by 2, you have 25. Just reminding us that, that whole Jay-Z forever young thing. Yeah, that's not true. It's just one of those rare and short reminder that we are growing every day. We don't see it because it's a very slow process, but it's happening. So just have a good life, celebrate, enjoy life. I'm told to tell your loved ones that you love them, give them a hug, give them flowers, give them anything that you think they are worthy of you giving them, or they are worthy of all the good things they've done for you. That shows your appreciation for anything positive they have done, or more like anything positive they've contributed in your life. Now, I'm beginning to sound like one of those self-help books, but I just like to point that out more often to myself more than to you, actually. So with that reminder out of, out of the way, let me introduce you to today's discussion. Today's discussion is centered around Triple P, aka public-private partnership. Now, if you've noticed, if you're one of those, one of those people that is in your, let me say over, in your 30s, because statistics shows that the older people grow, the older people grow, the more they, the more they take economic and political discussions, the more they take interest in political and economic discussions. That's because when you are young, these things, decisions made in parliament does not actually directly impact you, because it does impact you, but you have mom and dad there to worry, to worry about all the inflation, all the tax hikes, or the hikes in prices of everything, including tariffs and stuff. But the more the older you grow and you become that independent man or independent woman, then you now have to then you come to realize that there is such a thing as mortgage. Food expenses, electricity, utilities, and all these things. Now, when you are paying for all these things out of your pocket, not when mom is taking care of it, you don't feel the pain. When you are paying for it yourself, you begin to realize that, oh my God, where is this money going? Who is making all these decisions and how is it impacting me? Because, responsibilities tend to make people take interest in things that is impacting them. Now, in this case, prices of pretty much everything around us. So, which is why today we are going to be talking about public private partnership, because everything development is tied into that. And when it comes to any national goals we have as a country, and we have quite a lot of them. Now, blessing us with his presence is yours truly, Dwight Links. Now, we have a lot of plans as a country. We have a lot of, developmental plans. And I like how we like to call, on a United Nations level, they're called SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals. That's not what we're going to be talking about. I just want to emphasize that because today's discussion is more on development related. Albeit not directly, but I'm pointing towards the SDGs because of the word sustainable, because that for me points out to one fact that the word we are, the key word there is sustainable. What you want is Un momento, s'il vous plaît.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana konongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarude itayo loka opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. So, where are we? SDGs, albeit that's not the center of today's discussion. It's a development related. And this is for those of you that have made your way to social media and saw a poster. Then you saw that some creative works coming from yours truly. Moi, you're welcome. So the point of development basically is to keep it going. Once it's set up in place, you don't want to you don't want to set everything up today and then well, you don't have plans on how to keep it running. It's sort of like building a house. After building it, you have to constantly replace all the broken windows and then renovations every now and then and expansions every now and then, depending on how if a check pops up. Now, the thing is, needless to say, the goal here is we're going to talk about development in terms of employment, basically. Now, I quickly realized that development is basically the reasons behind is service provision. So you want for you to offer, take for example, for you to solve food insecurity, that means you have to invest more in agriculture. That means you are going to have to to set up a lot of green schemes. Now, these are infrastructure that you are going to set up and now to constantly cultivate the food that will be feeding the population. Now, then obviously with time the population is going to increase. That means you are going to have to start investing into the expansion of those green schemes. Now, the same can be said for roads, the same can be said for schools, the same can be said for for hospitals. Any facility that you are going to use to execute, that you're going to use to execute, tasks, in providing a service, a particular service or producing a particular good. So, all this, on all levels, you are talking about employment. Like whether you're producing a product or you're providing a service, employment is required. But producing a service or producing a product or providing a service, all these things requires infrastructure. That from setting it up again, employment is created. So employment looking at it in a broad way, employment is on all levels of, it's on all levels of development from, from setting up of the, take for example, the physical infrastructure to running and maintaining that particular infrastructure. Mr. Links?
And good afternoon, listeners, from my side. Obviously, just going a little bit of a hunt here in the office.
Looks like you got here in a hurry.
Plus the hunt associated to a piece of paper. But yeah, you don't worry.
That's found them.
Found one of them. But obviously, yes. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Obviously, what we selected for today, because. Obviously, our foundation for today is based upon an opinion piece. So, the opinion piece has two sides to it. Has two sides to it. The one is more like a plea, the one side of the opinion piece. The second part of the opinion piece sent me down a rabbit hole for the most of my day for today, reading into so much
legislations?
Not just the legislations. The legislations was the thing that I was sort of like flying on the, you know, running up and down on the ceiling about when I sent you what legislation was impeding potential triple P.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's even a triple P scenario. Do you know why I'm saying?
Debatable.
Well, the triple P status of the situation is is a debatable part.
Yeah.
Because how I understand triple P to be is that triple P is technically something based upon government procuring or public sector procuring from private sector.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is. This can be mass housing in order to meet a specific need out there.
Yeah.
Or it could be you just selling copy paper to the ministry. It's triple P either way.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't place the order for a box of copy paper from a stationery supplier, the opportunity would have been that that stationery supplier did not make the sale at that time for you as the public, you know, public, public sector representative. Same to also, the modern economic theory situation, which is what Namibia finds itself in. And I'm using that term loosely, in the sense that obviously we're a developing country. We are not the United Kingdom or America.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at mass housing in its own right, that is a triple P initiative, meaning it's not government building the houses. It's a initiative, a policy, a direct need identified by the government or public sector saying, hey, listen, there are so many people out there who have a need for affordable housing. Let's put cash forward. Let private sector construction companies bid and tender in the various regions to meet the needs across the country. Now, obviously, you can see how diverse triple P illustrations are.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to use convoluted explanations or hyperbole, which I at one stage read as hyperbole. Yes, guys, don't worry. I have these, my own jokes for myself, you know, in my own space at home.
Yeah.
You know, when you misread a word and you go like, eh, are you sure that's the word? And you go like,
been there.
Yeah. We, you know, English has taught us lessons. But when you look at the opinion piece itself. And dear listeners, if you are trying to understand what the opinion piece is, it was written by the founder of the Blue Kelp project that's they're based at Ludritz, Mr. Daniel Wuft. He's Dutch, but he's been living in Namibia for, I think, more than 5 years. The initiative itself is at least 5 years old. But it's the two parts. This is almost like H.G. Wells's A Tale of Two Cities, which technically speaks about a Napoleonic War, since Helmut, how events on a macro level impact micro lives. You know, if you go down to characters associated to the main storyline.
Mostly I call it either a trickle-down cost or trickle-down consequences.
When you look at the discussion of triple P itself, triple P itself is a very weird scenario, because obviously at one stage you have people in the Namibian economy who wish that a government's influence in an economy is very small and that the market sets the rules of everything. Meaning, take a look at like football. The leagues form themselves across the world, but FIFA does not get involved with how the game is played, because FIFA has already set down the laws and the rules of the sport. You just need to subscribe, which is a crude example I'm using. It's a very crude example. But triple P in many cases is associated to capital projects or development projects and the likes.
Like
but
large scale.
Yeah. So I'm talking about schools, dams, and those kinds of things. I, specifically, how I understand it, is any form of procurement that the public sector needs from the private sector. Because we have to understand this, Helmut. You can just be a service provider, ne? You can come and provide banking services even. You can be one of Namibia's commercial banks.
Yeah.
And you will not, you will be shocked, Ahmed, and many Namibians probably will also be shocked when I tell them now, right now, today, that the banking sector has the government as a client while adhering to rules of the government. Our ministries make use of commercial banks to pay for things.
Yeah.
That is triple P to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government owns the banking system, but the banking system is actually run by the commercial banks.
On the regulations that the
government sets.
Passes, yeah.
But the government doesn't get involved specifically with how, by how much a house is sold or car is sold, yeah, or a loan is. The only thing the government is involved in is primarily telling the commercial bank, hey, listen, this is the interest rate that, yeah, you have to pay for it, dispensing loans and money and making money flow in the economy. And that's all I want. And then it's up to the private sector to put their margin on, to put their markup on that 6.75, or was it? Yeah. Percent that recently was adjusted last week. It's their responsibility because it's their responsibility to make money for their shareholders.
Not just that, it's about sustainability for them to keep, dispensing the services that they do.
Yeah. It's you're there for a long-term gain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now here's the thing.
They have employees to pay. They have, all types of expenses, including your water and electricity. All these things needs money.
Exactly. Now here's where things go. Oh, it's a good thing you're pointing that out as well. The, electricity part of it. Remember our electricity discussions? The ECB, NamPower, affordability of electricity,
yeah,
talking points. The solar energy producers, the renewable energy producers.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that conversation?
Yeah.
That's also triple P. What happened? Government had to open up the market to guys who were buying large scale or doing bulk purchases of solar panels. And companies that were buying solar panels to decrease their footprint.
Yeah.
But primarily you can see it's for them to try and save money for themselves by not having the money flow out to NamPower, but rather the money stays internally. And all you do is that you decrease your dependency from something external and thus making yourself self-sufficient.
You see now, when people say cutting costs, that's a brilliant way of cutting costs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, how triple P also gets translated. And I know the Wikipedia explanation of sitting here with me speaks about schools, roads and bridges. But the government buys a lot more than just a service, a consultancy fee, and all those other things. For a bridge, a road, a school, and a hospital. The government buys the disputed medical tenders.
Mm-hmm.
The disputed medical tenders. Are you telling me, Helmut, that the cost of a hospital or a school, which is way lower than a 3 billion Namibian dollars for, was it condoms or medication? Which one was the disputed one for, is it condoms or medication?
No, that must have been $3 billion. That was medication.
That was medication. Yeah. And then there was obviously also the condom one, which was just as well as also a significant amount of money,
yeah,
that was tendered for. So when you look at those things, that's also triple P. Because the disputes that occurred from those two things was that, local production of said particular items, meaning the supplied items to the state,
yeah,
would eventually manifest in the local Namibian economy, thus leading to capacity development for the said particular bidding or tendering business to build up their own ability to manufacture and package and and source various kinds of resources for whatever business they're going to endeavor in the medical sphere of things. But Namibia is slowly, silently but slowly, Helmut, we are trying to change that trajectory. Helmut, let me explain to you an ugly thing that I watched last night of a documentary about Germany.
Germany Now?
Yeah, Germany today.
Not the Weimar Republic?
No, not even when the failed Austrian painter was there busy with expansionist ideals and finding Lebensraum everywhere. No.
Remind me to send you one joke after this. Really dark. That was done by a German on yeah. that, but go on.
So, what did Triple P look like? Okay, not just Triple P, but I'm talking about the things in terms of how, the kinds of people that Namibia's economy wants, according to NDP 6 on all the other NDPs and also Harambe Prosperity Plan 1 and 2, all of those particular national policy documents,
yeah.
is we want Helmut to achieve a modernization component. And also factoring in the discussion I had last week Wednesday with Chinese ambassador to Namibia, Ambassador Chao Wei-Ping here on the China corner. The discussion, Helmut, is that you've got to look at the needs that are present. But what has your education system been doing in the meantime? Now, if your education system had not been training medical professionals for, let's say, for a good 20 years of your education system's existence, and now suddenly here in the 20-teens you realize, oh my goodness, we need to open up a health school because people are asking, why are we sending people to Russia to be trained in medicine if they can't afford the medical school in the medical schools in South Africa, which was also a little bit of a shortchange because at independence we were supposed to tell ourselves, first and foremost, we have to start producing our own skilled Namibians in engineering. We did it in engineering. We did it in IT, but for the love of everything that's blue, green in Namibia and even a little bit of gray and yellow, why did we not do it for medicine? Why did we not do it for medicine? Helmut, two of the guys from the Pfizer vaccine for COVID.
Yeah.
The Pfizer vaccine. The other half of the Pfizer vaccine's name is Pfizer BioNTech.
What does that mean?
BioNTech is the other company.
So it's two companies.
It's two companies, yeah. Which is obviously, as you can see, it's a joint venture.
Yeah.
It's a collaboration. It's a joint venture for a Triple P initiative, which was a global crisis. Pfizer American, BioNTech German. BioNTech was started by a husband and wife combination. It's a family business, Helmut. Those guys became overnight multi-billionaires. Germany has 23 multimillionaires. I'm talking about everyone above a million, which also includes the billionaires. Out of the 83 million Germans they have as a national population, which obviously shows you that they realize, you know, there's so much services, so many things. They emphasized on skills. They emphasized on education, achieve certain things, provide it to each other, left, right, and center. That's how it goes. You get to South Africa's particular scenario. South Africa's just as an interesting concept as well. But even though South Africa takes the cake on everything wrong around Triple P and Triple P corruption. I mean, just go look at the Tembisa hospital situation. Guys were shopping around for tenders.
Look, man.
Not tenders to do a job. Tenders to just say, you know what? I need a couple of hundred million from there. Can you just e-wallet me that
yeah.
couple of hundred? And then you ask,
no,
okay.
No, that's illegal. Don't worry. What are the legal loopholes here? The legal loopholes. Now, how do we go around them? Let's just register over 200 shell companies.
Just for the fun of it. Just so that we can make that 200 million just bounce between accounts. Now, a UNESCO explainer. I'm going to use UNESCO yeah. as a neutral thing. A UNESCO explainer of Triple P's are a collaborative agreement between government entities and private sector companies to finance, build, and operate projects that serve the public. That's a UNESCO explainer once again. In a developing country like Namibia, Helmut, every transaction between government and private sector is Triple P. It is Triple P.
That's basically what it is. Because okay, public-private.
Yeah, but
and
the
then
emphasis...
you have another P for partnership. You're basically looking at it from an interaction of public and private.
Yeah.
When they partner together to basically, you know, to complement each other in terms of developmental roles that they would like to play. Mm. Because one thing you have to understand is that this is one giant, this is basically a fancy way of saying doing business.
Mm.
Because both the public, the public sector have services to dispense,
yeah,
and the private, you have different private sector entities that offer, certain services or certain products that will help or enhance the provision of of those services. Now, this is basically set up a developmental program. After setting it up, it's it's nearly, if not borderline, impossible for the government to play all the roles of making the regulation and basically running the show of both dispensing services and to play both the public and private sector role.
Mm.
Yeah, of just be self sufficient to the point where not only are you dispensing this, the health of, the service of health, for example, but you also own the construction companies that are building the hospitals and the companies that are wiring the hospitals and the companies that are supplying the medication. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
So that's where I think the complementary relationship between the public and private, the private sector now comes in to form this triple P, the partnership, which then, the public private sector, private partnership also, leaves room for, for an ordinary Namibian to basically participate in their own economy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be the involvement of the local content policy discussion, which has been what we covered in the oil and gas stakeholder engagements that was the Minister of International Relations did across the regions, which once again speaks to trying to bring together some sort of aspect or essence of triple P-ness. I say triple P-ness. Please, guys.
You didn't have to repeat it because now it's stuck in my head, but go on.
I don't want to use the word that ladies use for us, that sentence. But the reason why I added the N-E-double-S part to this, to the triple P acronym, was because it sounds good on paper. It sounds good in a notion. But look at what happened recently to NAMRA with that standing committee's visit to the border.
The facilities
they need at the border. That's where triple P goes wrong. That's where oversight and project management are key by the public entities that purchase from the private sector. Now, the private sector also has to be, and I'm just sort of like taking a reach here. They also have to be a little bit honest. Look, the business that they do is what's that word's name? Is ethical. The business that they do is ethical.
Yeah.
It's whether or not you can detect if the item, the product, the service is going to have any negative impacts on the lives of humans. And which you now also have to extend under the ESG frameworks that Namibia tries to now also participate in. You have to now also expand that to an environmentalist view of things. Does it now also damage or harm the natural environment? Yeah. So it's the society where the humans live and the natural environment where that human societies are based within. The product from there is a discussion of what does the society do with the product and how do they discard of the product in the environment that they live in, which gets us to the e-waste discussion. Because it's all good and well, Hamoud, in that factory when this smartphone or your smartphone or the computer here in the studio is being made in the factory, the moment it leaves the factory floor, what happens to the product out there? How does it get used? If it gets damaged, how does it get discarded? Yeah. Does it get discarded properly? Does it get recycled? Does its components get reused and recycled? What happens to the product? Or does the product go and become a radioactive item somewhere there in the bush?
You know, busy polluting underground water and causing all kinds of problems for the people health-wise, which then
on a large scale
spells disaster for the Minister of Environment, Minister of Health, and Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah. And then they go and ask themselves, oh, why do we have certain particular sort of like weird kinds of poisoning elements coming about from underground water?
Yeah.
And the Ministry of Health doesn't know how to respond, because the Ministry of Health needs to understand what is the source of this. The Minister of Agriculture probably doesn't do adequate testing out there in the field. This is just a hypothetical situation, guys. Mm-hmm. Not blaming anyone. We're just, you know, factoring.
Thank you for pointing that part out.
Illustrating a picture for you of potential issues that can come about.
Because I know a lot of those. They would, you know, they would lecture me after this show.
A lot of what?
Minister of Agriculture guys.
A lot of agriculture guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's good. Let them lecture. But let them also be aware. But I now bring you closer, Hamid, in terms of what, you know, our foundation piece of literature also cited, was that there's going to be later in this week a public-private forum. I say it with a little bit of vinegar, a lot of vinegar. But here's the discussion, Helmut. As I've pointed out in many other scenarios of our discussion, of
good
our show.
Good on paper.
Huh?
Good on paper.
Not just the good on paper. I have an issue with the other local authorities. With the other local authorities. That's where my issue lies.
Yeah.
That's where the discussion that I had last week Wednesday with Ambassador Zhao Weiping here on Wednesday night last week cited specifically how China got it right to move 800 million people in 30 years from extreme poverty out of it into the levels of prosperity at the start of 1990 when we became independent.
Yeah.
Now, from 1990 up until now, obviously, Helmut, this is our first 35-year period of our growth phase.
Yeah.
Obviously, between from 1950 or from 1947, when the Japanese were kicked out of China, till 1979, obviously that's a good 30, 40-year period as well, obviously, where China in their own right were trying to find their ways, trying to find their feet, having their growth pains. Obviously, also, they had their other particular, you know, situations pop up, you know, like the Cultural Revolution that took place, and then there was the other revolution that also took place. There were, like, two of them that took place, besides the Civil War with the guys that ran to Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
What's the guy's name? Chiang Kai-shek's guys that ran to Taiwan. The Republicans, as they call themselves. No, we're not talking about the American Republicans, guys. Just chill on that.
We're in Asia.
Yeah, we're in Asia. So, when you had to look at their growth phase, which is the growth phase we are having, many people will just remember from 1979 up until 1990. As if to say that anything before 1979 was, there was like nothing happening there, apparently.
Not much.
Supposedly. But the Chinese themselves were literally trying and finding their ways to see what they can do in an insulated, you know, by closing themselves off from the rest of the world first, and sorting out internal issues. But the internal issues were based upon things like Helmut, they had to deal with, they were, what was it? There was a famine at one stage, during that period. Besides the other famines, obviously, you know, pre-World War II. But they had to deal with a famine as well. And that's also one of the reasons why they started that, Great Green Wall discussion. They're about combating the Gobi Desert's advance.
Yeah.
Because push back by trying to plant more vegetation and ensure that you try to, which is a word of terraforming, you try to change the geography in that sense.
Yeah, in terms of vegetation, yeah.
No, not education.
Vegetation.
Yeah, the vegetation, yeah. So they're trying to do those things because they realize they're going to have, their population is still going to grow. They're going to have more mouths to feed. So there's going to be a lot more people. So they need more food. And one of the important things was during that period is that China first decided that all food produced in the country is meant for internal consumption first. you first feed yourself before you feed anyone else. Now, I know in our discussion in Namibia, we became lazy, Helmut.
Okay, but yeah, that's one thing we saw during the COVID-19 lockdowns. So with yep. countries like I remember, you know, was that India with wheat and was that Egypt with chicken?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they decided, you know what, we're going to keep as much as possible internally until, you know, we have everything sorted out here. That's when we start exporting.
The weird thing is, ne, in agriculture, if your agriculture didn't have the machinery, the people that worked in those agriculture plantations still had to go back and go and pick the food. Yeah. Those things were not going to stand still.
They're gonna, but not for long before they start spoiling. Look, a very simple, I went through like 1,000 definitions, but you know, the very simple definition of public private partnership, I was basically able to construct with my own limited government school English vocabulary is that public private partnership is a complementary relationship between the public and private sector. Now, as a country, we have developmental plans. We want to grow economically. We want to grow economically. Now, this growth requires a lot of infrastructure, most of which is physical, whether you are looking at it this from a physical infrastructure or the, or the soft type of infrastructure. Now we're talking about technology and, throwing skills, skills also in that bucket.
Yeah.
All these things requires different players. Now, these players must then come together and then let their strengths and weaknesses basically complement each other for the mutual benefit of both of them. Because when the private sector is, take for example, no one would apply for a tender in the private sector if it wasn't for the money.
Mm.
Yeah. So now, again, money then here is a very, money here is a very central part of it. So the, the private sector either has the equipment or they have the skills. Of which the public sector needs, and then those skills are well acquired for a fee. Those skills are offered for the government to advance its developmental goals, for whether this is an expansion of providing a service or producing a good. Now, this is where our example of something that I blend a lot of new things today. It didn't occur to me that seaweed can be used as a fertilizer. It turns out, it doesn't, it's not that rich in nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, NPK, which is more of a primary nutrients needed by a plant to grow. Mm. But it does have one quality one quality that I think is very important for our region, and that's because it helps a plant become strong in terms of weathering through either diseases or harsh weather.
Yeah.
So it basically, it's basically an immune booster for plants, if I can put it that way. So the thing is, and also just how long it...
An immune booster for plants?
Immune booster. Makes them...
Was that you're thinking of?
That's the only vocabulary, I had in mind. Now, it turns out they can grow a very tall.
Yeah.
Now the first thing when you shared all those documents, the first thing that came in my mind was that, okay, maybe the Ministry of Agriculture here is reluctant to give all these guys all the proper paperwork that they need for them to start, for the smooth operation of their business. The first thing that came in my mind was deforestation.
Mm.
Yeah, I know that this is seaweed. It's deep on the seabed. It turns out they grow really tall. From the explanation, for the most part, because they're very tall. First of all, they also grow at a very fast rate.
Mm.
So that means their growth rate is fast. That means that gives you a lot of harvest, it gives you a multiple harvest per time, per certain time period, compared to other types of plants that you'd grow, for example.
Yeah.
Although the classification of whether or not it's a plant is also a whole debate on its own. I didn't want to get into the whole, technicalities because, well, I couldn't understand a thing, but I was reading English. Then I came to the part of information where the explainer was pointing out that these things grows really fast. They grow really fast. That means, you cut them today, next week or a week or two or a month, they're already recovering.
Mm.
So that means they're not cutting them at the root, at least from the information I was able to gather. They're not cutting them at the root or uprooting them. That means, at the seafloor, they can still have, be.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. What's going on here is more like pruning. That means, you're just cutting off more like the top of it. But the main plant can still serve as a very, excellent habitat for whatever animal species that live in that part of the ocean floor.
Mm.
So that's when I, started, asking myself, okay, now, if this is not the problem, then what is? Because I'm looking at this from a food, from two topics that we have already covered.
Yeah.
One, food security. We have a serious food insecurity because of all the malnutrition. And we have goals we would like to achieve in terms of combating food insecurity. Now, agriculture is obviously that's where we come in.
Yeah.
And that takes us to, that takes us to the Office of the Auditor General's report, Ministry of Agriculture, on their extensive use of inorganic fertilizer and how that in the long run is going to spell a lot of something that the Minister of Environment have to deal with in terms of environmental impact. All these things, I'm looking at it from the angle of, this seaweed fertilizer would be, two beds with one stone. First of all, you have a locally produced fertilizer that has less negative impacts on the environment.
Mm.
And also, seeing that we are a semi-arid country, can basically contribute to strengthening the plants or whatever it is that you are cultivating. And we are back to square one. Why? The reluctance.
Well,
there are reasons out there.
No, I actually was also avoiding slightly that issue.
We're not analyzing that part.
Yeah. Primarily because if we have to also look at Triple P, what's at the heart of doing business in Namibia? And this is where we've got to identify one of the biggest headaches in the room when it comes to business. Remember our ease of business, doing business discussion 2 weeks back.
You're going to make money.
The aim is the private sector guys are here to make money. They are according to some private sector participants currently in Namibia, there's a lot of people out there that want to bring money. And from the foundation of our foundation literature, which is that opinion piece in today's e-paper, written by Mr. Wirft, was that he lost investors,
that withdrew because of
legislation at the bedrock of doing business in Namibia being problematic. Now, here's where another issue around legislation, dear listeners, becomes problematic. And this is as I realize that legislation is also a hampering thing in Namibia. Helmut, the legislation that...
Yeah, this subject, you know, keeps popping up.
The legislation is a subject matter that you can link back to the Business Rescue Task Force that President Geingob established during COVID. He established it during just literally towards the end of 2020, and they had to give feedback in 2021 or 2022 regarding how far they got with analyzing what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. If any of you have the opportunity, dear listeners, go and look up that document. That document is pretty straightforward, and that document tries to deal with the problematic legislation in Namibia. And we've got problematic legislation like there's legislation that aims to punish you if your business fails, Helmut. And when I say punish you, it's literally to the extreme of you being put in jail for your business failing. Now, who in what world wants to do business in such a country that has a law that can potentially put you in jail? For your business failing.
Look, you're going to have to be specific as to one business. What business? Because, someone with days going, you see, I'm in prison because of my business. Not the illegal kind.
Hamid, I was talking about the above board, you know, the legit business enterprises. I wasn't talking here about...
Crackheads? Okay, sorry.
I wasn't talking about... The guys who go
Snoop Dogg's followers.
The guys who go put a 3-year-old as the majority shareholder of a company situation. Well, that is also legit business. Yeah, that was also that is legit.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's take it one step further. I'm not talking about the tender shoppers, like what you find in South Africa and potentially which has been a talking point in Namibia.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about those guys. And even then, those guys are trying to be legit, except for the South Africans. I'm not defending the South Africans.
No. It's kind of hard to defend those
guys. It's very difficult to defend the South Africans because the South Africans' main aim is literally to just get access to the money without doing anything. They don't want to do anything.
This is, that was a very elaborate and very complicated way of privatizing public funds.
Privatizing, Helmut?
Because this was public funds.
You're going to go with privatizing, Helmut? The guy bought 3 Lamborghinis, Helmut?
Because as soon as this money was paid to his companies that only exist on paper, it stopped being public funds. It started being his own private company money. Because of the service that he provided in his imagination, because he did not provide that service. I call it,
you're being very soft on such guys, ne? Clearly had no intent of doing service.
No, they had no intention, which is why they developed all this spider. You know what pains me the most?
Yeah.
Is the fact that these guys built up a scheme so good, they managed to enrich themselves.
Mm.
So we can actually think outside the box and build something up, just not for collective benefit.
Mm.
For personal benefit, we're very good at thinking outside that box. But when it comes to working together to accomplish something, we are very terrible at that.
Yeah.
Which is why and also the dedication behind the whole looting. Was that Professor Lumumba who said that there's no corruption in Africa. Corruption entails that there's some kind of intelligence behind behind the acquisition of this money.
Mm.
What's going on in Africa is not it's not corruption. It's looting on an industrial scale, which makes a lot of sense because one hospital, man, there's no explanation you can come up with to justify that.
Mm.
One hospital. $2.something billion. And on top of that, now you have to factor in all these poor nurses and doctors that genuinely went to school to try to, to basically earn a living the honest way. And now you have a doctor who is really hitting their head on the pillow every day, trying to put their hands on the state-of-the-art equipment so they can save their patients. But they don't have this these equipments because you used the money to buy an Aventador.
Yeah.
Now,
and a Urus.
Yeah.
And I almost said a Murcielago, but the Murcielago is way older.
No, that's probably a really old one.
Show how old I also am. Yeah. Say a Murcielago. But yeah.
Now,
all the same color.
Guess
what's his color?
Homeboy's favorite color. Don't want to imagine his, you know, color of his boxers. But anyway, what you have is.
Why would you go there? You could have probably said, you know, hey, look at the decor in my bedroom. And then everyone is like, wow. Your car.
That's a lot of blue.
The, your car's and your bedroom has the same color.
Mm. But yeah. Now, the thing is, I think this is where regulations now comes in. And this is a regulation in a broader scale, not a regulation just on paper, because South Africa has the best regulations on paper. If they if South Africa's regulation on paper was put into a practical, was basically practiced, what happened to Tembisa Hospital would not have happened.
Yeah,
it would not have happened. It's just the trembling over of pretty much every regulation and blackmailing and basically straight up to the diabolical assassination of everyone that tries to uphold the regulations that are on paper.
Mm.
Now, that's kind of difficult to fight. That's kind of difficult to fight. And now, I think that's where one of my favorite pieces of legislation we have in this country is the Bank of Namibia Act. Because because it's one of those pieces of legislations I go through, more often and go like, every piece of legislation in this country that's running and then SOE, especially SOEs, must be drafted with, must be drafted with this structure that, if you are going to be a governor, you can't have a side hustle.
You can't even have a company.
No, you can't have a side hustle. Because, this is where, because a public and private, a public-private partnership is more often defeated by people being allowed to save, being allowed to have side hustles.
Yeah.
Take, for example, I am a shareholder. I'm a shareholder in a mine. And, also, either I'm a minister or a deputy minister of mining.
Mm.
And then, let me just say, the simplest
and
example.
You can explain Ramaphosa's position. He was vice president of the country.
No, thank heavens, no, not that. Basically similar to that. Now, I'm a minister of labor. Or maybe take, for example, I'm the head of the labor commission. And, I have shares in a mine.
Mm.
If those employees at the mine that I have shares in, or basically every entity, private entity that I have shares in, start airing their grievances to that commission, it's very easy for me to basically, protect my shares in this company rather than doing my job to listen to their grievances.
Which is literally what happened to Ramaphosa.
The mining situation.
The Marikana mine massacre.
Yeah.
The linkage supposedly made is that an email of Ramaphosa was supposedly the igniting spark.
For the police officers to start
shooting. But everyone wants to know is who gave the order for the police to open fire. And no one can find that order.
Okay, one thing I know about orders is that they go up chain of command.
No one can find that order, Hamu.
That's possible.
Unless someone asks Mkwanazi now that question. No one can find that order. Because the police closed rank and all they did was No one is even answering.
No, look, the thing is, if the police themselves basically decided to defy orders and start shooting, oh, there would be a catastrophe. They would have been taken to court.
Yeah.
So the fact that not a single police officer was basically, you know, were those guys prosecuted?
Never.
Now.
No one is even arrested of that.
That's how you know the command came from somewhere high up, because if it was just a regular police officer, you would be hearing you'd be hearing nonsense like, we want to restore, our role is to protect the public, we want to restore public trust, and anyone that breaks, that threatens the trust we have with the public will be brought to book, no one is above the law. You'll be hearing crap like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, if the order did not come from someone powerful, if it came from, a low level regular police officer, helmeted type of regular, they would have been held accountable. Because because even in this whole Tembisa Hospital balloon that just blew up, there are a lot of police officers that are now, are either undergoing under prosecution or they've been sentenced.
Mm.
The fact that that did not happen to that man just goes to show, oh, that order came from way up.
Yeah, it did. But that was why I said the media at that stage was trying to put the blame on that email.
Mm-hmm.
That they supposedly got through legit means from Ramaphosa's own email server.
What did the email say?
The email was someone from in the company structure, because Ramaphosa was only on the board as a board of shareholders.
Yeah.
And it was apparently referred to him, the question, in terms of because of saying,
what do I do?
Because he was also a former mining unionist.
Yeah.
Who can take a decision about these guys about these guys demonstrating? And the downside was, apparently, Ramaphosa just gave a answer to say, get rid of the guys. But get rid of the guys does not imply or does not
open fire.
Categorically say, shoot on them, kill them. It doesn't state that.
Okay, you are telling police officers, get rid of the guys. Like, you're going to have to be very specific. Like, get rid of the guys is very vague.
But here's the thing, Amut. The email is not directed to the chief of police.
Okay, who is it directed to?
It was to one of the mining guys. Supervisors in the mining company.
Okay, how did the police officers act on an order coming from a...
Well, Amut, that is the... what's the pala-pala couch's value?
Multi-million.
Multi-million rand question. How, and this is also sometimes where critically asking the question of some media, even from South Africa, how did they get to that springboard to say that the blame lies with Ramaphosa?
Yeah.
Because Ramaphosa is not even the CEO, he's on the board of shareholders.
Yeah.
So, how did they get to that leap?
Now, again, you have to understand that, whatever influence take, for example, the CEO, the CFO head, and then manage to influence the police officers, high ups for them to influence the police to start doing that, what they did. It's still, now, if you look at it from, if you just put all the emotions aside. People die. It's very difficult to, you know, to do that. But just, you know, just try. Put all the, you know, just look at it from purely, you know, a legislative issue. If you want to solve it using the law, the question you're going to ask is, who is going to be held accountable? It's the company.
Yeah. Yes, because
is the question,
because the miners were employees of the company. Yeah. But here's the thing, Helmut. If you also look at it from a public safety discussion,
unless you can push it to the point of you know of going beyond the corporate veil to hold the share, you know, hold shareholders accountable, that boy, that rarely happens.
Helmut, do you know how those miners were, what they had while they were demonstrating?
Pangas,
not just pangas, asahais. Spears. What's that thing's name? We call it in Afrikaans the Knopkiri, the club, the African club.
So you were armed.
They were protesting with those things. Now, if you're a riot police officer, you're seeing a guy that's armed. That's one of the fundamental mistakes of the day. People can cry and be sad and tell me all kinds of human rights situations. For you were not there with that police officer on that ground.
You know, I'm talking about
in general.
You're familiar with the term called a false flag attack, right?
Yeah. False flag is usually, you know, citing there's an issue there.
Yeah.
There's nothing, which was the whole Iraq war, Helmut Autohop.
Yeah.
The whole Iraq war was a false flag. The whole Iraq war is a false flag operation.
The thing is, if you have a police officer,
yeah,
who has been bribed by the, you know, by whatever organization you are protesting against.
But we also don't know that.
That's what
the South African media also could not prove.
No, that's just an example.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just an example I'm giving. If I take for example, I'm some kind of commander that's leading that protesting group, and I'm begging for an excuse to tell these guys to open fire so we can just solve this once and for all. Because the bottom line is, I need an excuse to give the judge if I'm dragged to court. You holding machetes and pangas gives me that excuse. You're basically making my very diabolical, though it may be, job easy.
Who? Is your job as a police?
My job as a corrupt police officer.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll just be like, they are armed.
Mm.
They are armed. I can basically expand the definition of what to be armed means, because I know these are the questions I'll be answering in court. What is to be armed? Well, they had weapons. And they were threatening me. I had to act in a certain way.
Yeah.
That's one of those very terrible consequences. But anyway, now the thing is, the public-private partnership, if you ask me, it's okay. We have had this partnership for a very long time now as a country.
Mm.
Now, so that means clearly it works. It has its own quirks, but it does work.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the more a country develops, the more you run a risk if it's not well regulating, if it's not well regulated, of ending up with a revolving door politics, where you have what's going on in countries like the US, where you have people like Dick Cheney, you know, jumping between private, you know, being CEOs of private companies to sitting in some of the biggest, offices in Washington.
Mm.
So now you're basically running in between, jumping in between public and private sector. So if it's not well regulated, the private sector can be, you know, the private sector can dominate regulations. That's when things becomes very ugly now. But
it becomes murky.
It becomes very ugly.
There is a template in Europe that is so ugly. I don't even want us going or thinking in that direction. This template is ultimately what happened. Okay, first, it's two templates. It's sort of like what's currently happening in the US at the start when Donald Trump stepped into office.
Oh, dear.
He fired, I don't know if you remember the story where he fired the directors general of like 14 departments of the government. So directors general mm. are all, think of them as the Auditor General in Namibia. Mm. But think of it as each ministry in Namibia has an Auditor General office in each ministry. So they review and investigate and they look into any potential corrupt practices from tendering, service provision and stuff like that. So instead of you having one entity that now has to seek, ask permissions from the guys, the other ministries, say, please give me your info. Mm-hmm. You have this guy replicated 14 times.
In all ministries.
So he removed those safeguards from potential corruption.
So it's a low-key deregulation.
Low-key, yes. He removed those, he fired the staff in those offices, in those departments.
Yeah.
He removed, funding for, any climate
initiatives, yeah.
He also, reduced the funding for the Environmental Protection Agency, which is supposed to be America's, sort of like, climate championing agency. And protection of American, you know, climate and vegetation. And that the idea was that he puts in a guy that's a yes man of, you know, a guy that sings and dances anything Trump policy wise.
So basically just, decided to get rid of everyone that disagreed with his way of doing things.
Yeah. So obviously at the start of things, it was about targeting the career government public servants.
Mm-hmm.
Who know their job, had been sticking to their job, but it was the first people that was sort of like targeted in the restructuring in the American government at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about
giving Night of Long Knives vibes.
Well, not really, but it wasn't just the USAID office.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally all regulatory safeguards. All regulatory safeguards.
If you want to run a country, that's dumb.
And what did Musk try to do? Musk wanted all government contracts. What did Musk do? Musk did the one African thing. Technically, he did the one South African thing that we know South Africans good for. And that was the worst of Triple P. What did Musk do? He literally established a department. He was allowed as a triple P. He was literally allowed to establish a department.
The Doge.
And then he harvested so much data of Americans without asking permission. The only permission he asked was permission from the US government. That was the biggest concern that people had.
The head of the US government was his homie at the time.
Exactly. Because he had sponsored his homie $400 million in his presidential comeback campaign.
Okay, now that's where we are going next.
Yeah. Because obviously.
Not as a country, no, just a discussion.
If Triple P can be influenced through, election campaign money, then what do you expect could happen? Now that's also the biggest concern in Namibia.
With Triple P.
That Triple P can be a buy-in mechanism through financing of election campaigns.
Yeah.
Helmut, 2 years back, before you and I partnered up here for the home run, I had to be swatting flies because there's literally a mosquito now around me, guys, here in the studio. I had to swat down a fire and a fly in the same day, regarding a photo featuring the Secretary General of the ruling party from a business person from the, who operates in the north specifically, but now they're operating in other parts of Namibia as well. For a donation to the party. But the Electoral Act is clear. Political parties are open for donations and any other kinds of gifts in kind. So if you wanted to talk about state capture, we already literally legalized it through the Electoral Act. The Electoral Act says it. And it says that those political parties have to put an ad or make it public that they received it 5 days after receiving said activity.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen any political party disclose any gift in kind? You know what was the weirdest thing, Helmut? That people, because when the fish rot.
No wonder they have a problem submitting their financial reports.
It's not just that. But even with the, at the start, in the first days of the Fishrod, you know, legal proceedings in 2020.
Yeah.
Many people literally wanted to go and, I don't know, go on a crusade of some holier than thou discussion regarding political party donations and contributions. But the Electoral Act literally clearly cuts political parties away from any other entities. It puts them separate in the Namibian economy. So that means anyone, doesn't matter how you got your money, can give money to a political party.
Yeah, and look, the reason behind that is very simple. These are, like all other entities, it requires money to operate.
And it doesn't, okay, ad break, guys.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben brandneue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat. Oder spare noch mehr mit unserem speziellen Abonnement-Plänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijamoili nawa ninge fa Fanona, Monica Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Timwe, Bali Heari, Nola Natu, Heari Bali, No Heari, Ileko Berewa, Noranetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
And welcome back. We continue with Triple P, Public Private Partnership. The collabo, you know, developmental collab between the public and the private sector in terms of exchanging goods and services to advance the overall economy. And so then, well, as in everything else, the system itself is not a problem, but how you operate it matters a lot. So you can have all the right, you can have all the right legislations written down, but they need an honest type of enforcement. And also,
exactly, yeah, Hamoud. Enforcement.
Enforcement. Because yeah. South Africa has all the right legislations and the enforcement is terribly questionable.
That could also be Namibia. Same WhatsApp group.
I don't have bodyguards, which is what we're saying in South Africa.
Same WhatsApp group.
Yeah, you know, look, I listened to Mkhwanazi's press conference from back in July. He said, well, they discovered this criminal syndicate that was operating in KZN.
Mm.
Yeah, but more like they had a headquarter in headquarter in KZN, but they were basically operating all across the country and in neighboring countries. It's like,
Of course, Namibia has to be in a WhatsApp group somewhere.
We have a lot of financial institutions, grocery stores, retail stores coming out.
You know, you can name that. No, you just list them, Helmut. Rattle them off.
So the insurance companies coming. So that means we are also importing some of the
not so good stuff.
Not so good stuff. You know, not so good stuff.
But Helmut, on the discussion of Triple P now. And the clearest indicators, obviously, is that we're obviously given the template of what is going right, supposedly, in Europe. Well, the best I can only use is continental Europe. Please don't talk about England.
Not.
Never talk to me about England, guys. Just never.
Things
are functioning in other parts of continental Europe. Just don't talk to me about England, because England is starting to look like a Namibia and / South Africa situation.
Just England or the whole UK?
Just England. Wales and Scotland are functioning because they have like divulged governance.
Oh.
So they established their own, like, it's like, think of it like a regional parliament that you establish for your region.
Yeah.
But think of it, but that would be like a regional council. But they have parliaments themselves. But they get their funding them in Northern Ireland, literally from the Westminster government in London.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just functioning pretty fine. It's England with its 60 million people. Now, England with its 60 million people.
Queen Elizabeth I will be super pissed.
Not just that. I mean, they have so much issues, Hamoud. Do you know that Birmingham's, one part of the city of Birmingham, which is the second largest city of the UK, for a good six or seven months, some suburbs in the city have not had their garbage removed. The refuse.
6 months.
Your dustbin garbage. Yes. It's piling up in the middle of streets, on the sidewalks, all those things. People that have family members living in Birmingham, they would know. Namibians that have family members in Birmingham, they would know. It was ugly. And do you know what it was? It was because of a pay strike by the garbage collection department people working for the local authority mm-hmm. of Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
There was a dispute, a union dispute, and the guys decided to go on strike. They didn't want to allow to hire more people, but they wanted the guys to do more shifts. And the guy was like, no.
No.
So, a strike broke out. Strike breaks out, people's garbage is not being collected.
Not a mess.
Yeah. So, the downside is, if you go to continental Europe in some cases, you see Triple P working. I mean, COVID is a classic example of Triple P working in the European context. The European government was clear. We'll put money forward. You medical science companies, start developing on a cure or on a vaccine or on medication or something. Come to the fore. They came with the fore. They presented their stuff. They presented the results. They had to do all that rush jobs that they had to do in 6 months and a year. And boom, by the end of 2020, vaccines were made, Hamoud. The Chinese had vaccines by the middle of the year of 2020. The Russians had their vaccine the same time even.
Not just that. I think there are a lot of, looking at companies like VW, for example.
Mm.
I think would be one of those good example of the public and private sector working together.
And the fact that if you have the right
regulations in place, and those regulations are enforced in the right way, nothing is obviously going to be 100% effective. We're not angels. That's why I think it was founding fathers of the US who said if men were angels, no one would need the government. What you see here is that the public and private working together can do a lot of good.
Yeah.
If the regulations are, first of all, well articulated and well executed in terms of holding people accountable.
As long as we don't sit with regulations that are more than 50 years old.
That's where the public sector now comes in.
Yeah.
The public, because it's up to parliamentarians, it's lawmakers to basically make sure that, the laws that are regulating the private sector, of which they are basically, they are some of their biggest, public and private service product and service providers are coming from the, you know, the private sector. You want to lay the very good legal foundation for them to operate on. You don't want to strangle them, but then you don't want to, you know, to let them loose to the point where they are basically, well, running around loose. So you just want to have that, you know, that that middle part, more like middle point, the sweet spot where you, where you are not strangling them and they are not running around loose, you know, influencing policy left, right, and center to their own advantage, which more often tends to the disadvantage of the public. And well, there's a reason why you should really not do, you know, there's a reason why you should pay attention to the public, because, well, in a lot of, it turns out high ups in the public sector, you have also a lot of people that are power hungry. You don't want to end up with like a Madagascar on your hands.
Madagascar also doesn't make sense, Helmut. There's something fishy about Madagascar, and people are talking about One Piece anime flags showing up. Wow. You see, that's also the thing about...
Is it the pirate thing?
Yeah, that's also the thing about, you know, these Gen Z guys. They go watch anime and they want to bring an anime concept, an animation concept into real life.
What anime?
One Piece.
One Piece is coming from, One Piece is coming from Nepal.
One Piece is in Madagascar, brah.
Is it, One Piece got to Madagascar? You, look, this is a Gen Z thing. This is Gen...
Do you know how old One Piece is?
I have no idea.
It's 20 years. It's 20 years old. The manga, the comic itself.
Yeah.
It's 20 years old. The TV show is probably now 15 years old now. And for some reason, people are now bringing the concepts there of a free world. Abahalo. Free for who?
Look, look, they are not the first one to do that. Well, look, they are not the first one to do that, Dwight. Well, you're... failed Austrian painter adopted a sign that was completely innocent back then. Now everyone is scared of it.
Which was a Greek symbol even.
A low wheel. It's a symbol of life.
Yeah. It was a Greek symbol.
And then he turned it into a symbol of death. Now everyone is going, ash.
Well,
get rid of that.
Yeah, you know, we don't make crosses that way, you know?
You know, make sure they're all straight. Don't bend them. Please,
please, please, please, please. But before that, Helmut, let's quickly take a live read. Vejvice University, for the 2026 applications, which are now open for the faculties of law, commerce, and education. Programs on offer, Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vejvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So if we had to look at, okay, look, service provision is obviously an issue.
Yep.
But it's just like I said, Helmut. The international media is giving me half-baked story.
From Madagascar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing about power is that, it's never, okay, it's never a one story. It's more often, in, like an onion, multiple layers.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, the thing is, again, that won't be the first one. That won't be the first time. Take the 2014, take the 2014, or basically any protest from the 2014 protests in Ukraine to the ones that took, the Arab Springs. They had a lot of external influence. And, that's, basically every, and I think it's these things that basically escalate into proxy wars. Proxy wars are proxy wars are pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
They are more often backed up by much bigger powers.
Yes. Or they probably have some unidentified influences. For example, what happened with the Maidan revolution in Ukraine in 2014.
Yeah.
In the Maidan discussion, what so conveniently
a lot of NGOs, unfortunately,
was so conveniently left out was that there was a discussion about who was behind the Maidan revolution? The orange wave, the guys wearing orange.
Yeah.
Now, guys, the unfortunate thing is what we don't know is we don't know how corrupt Ukraine is. We don't know. I mean, last year, at the end of last year, people were going on, Ukrainians were going on when it was identified that Vladimir Zelensky's wife was shopping in Paris.
Not just that.
Yeah, I know. But the Paris one was like the cherry on the cake.
Yeah. There were a lot, there was also, I think, one lady who is a wife of one high profile figure was also, I think, caught at the border with a lot of money.
Yeah, that lady.
Yeah.
That was caught at the border with the money in a bag, ne?
Yeah.
And this is...
No, this is one thing I don't understand about, one thing I don't understand about we poor and broke people. Rich people just start wars. They don't fight them. Poor people fight them. They just start the war.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then they come on the other side of the war.
Of whoever has won.
And then sit to discuss the terms of moving forward.
Of what terms they want.
Yeah.
From your rebuilding.
And to that meeting, you are not invited.
Even if you were the participant in the war, you don't even know about this meeting.
You know who said that better? The former First Lady, Monica Gengos, in one of the, the speech she gave I found that on social media as a video, and believe me, I double and triple checked. It's not AI. She pointed out that be careful of how you take sides when there's a political squabble, because even though when it's a frontline situation type of kicking the heck out of each other on different political disagreements, which she points out that different political parties are obviously going to have a lot of disagreements.
Yeah.
When there comes a time of settling that dispute, when they come around the table to talk about that problem and settle it diplomatically, you're not invited. But you are the one with a missing tooth from the protest. Mm.
With a blue eye, bones, bruises. That was you on the front line, frontlining.
But now that, when the front line is an air-conditioned room with a lot of beverages, you're not invited.
And coffee and tea and sandwiches in between.
And a lot of verbosity. You're not invited to that one. That's when I was like, oh man.
You will never participate in that one.
Like, this lady's ruining politics for me.
No, but you sometimes just have to take out the unnecessary stuff, Hamel. If you take out the noise, then you realize, but there's so much silence.
Yeah.
The noise is like skin deep. It's like paper thin. For example, the discussion also where we left it off in terms of the triple P scenario. And just before David steps in, the triple P scenario, but before that, we've got an ad break.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Ripurane ngeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili nehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Konongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushenji fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onmara isatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Triple P works. On paper.
Yeah.
If you don't have, I think Triple P is the best can work Volkswagen good. Like, I'm not talking about the car, I'm talking about the group.
Yes.
Yeah. Can work Volkswagen good.
Or DHL good.
DHL good.
Yeah.
If it's regulated and the regulations.
Or Lufthansa good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It can do that.
Yeah.
But writing the regulation on paper is not enough. We can see that with our neighbor to the south. Now,
having wonderful.
Yeah, they have it on papers, you know, impeccable. But the implementation now is where you have both generals and police officers and magistrates implicated in all kinds of questionable president in all kinds of questionable stuff.
Presidents, not one.
Presidents, plural. Yeah. Someone, you know,
who forgot to count.
Yeah.
On a paper.
Yeah, who needed, you know, swimming pool water for in the event of an emergency, in case the house catches fire. That's a waste.
A compound of a house, not even a house.
A point of correction, a village catches fire. That's not a house, dude. That's, yeah, so, all, Triple P works, but, strong regulation and strong enforcement of those regulations are needed.
Mm.
If not, it turns into Tembisa.
Of course, any day, anytime.
Anytime. So, the regulations then must, this basically requires, now, for you to end up with a, you know, for you to end up with a Lufthansa, VW, or or DHL,
mm.
it requires, very strict work ethics from both the lawmakers and the people that these laws are regulating. That's the, now, well, if, for the private sector guys, when they are given a job to do in the public sector or the private, when they are given a job to do by the public sector, they do it to the best of their ability. Not abandon stuff and then start saying, I underquoted you. I mean, with a mentality like that, no, you're not getting a Lufthansa anytime soon. Now, as a public sector, you are not passing laws to benefit you. Like I said, you are not strangling or letting a dog loose. No. You are just finding the sweet spot of regulating, of regulating so that the people that are offering you the service or the product can have enough room to breathe so that they can create the best product or they can offer the best service. To pull that off, that's going to require thinking beyond, I need a Lamborghini this year.
But here's the thing, Amud. You will always still have the need for a school or hospital, whatever, or even printing paper.
Yeah.
The discussion is just, what people actually want to see is a thriving private sector helping the public sector uplift many Namibians. Because if you continuously have discussions, just say, yeah, the government must just come and put money there. And we will show up with wheelbarrows. Hey! Hey! Hey!
We'll show up with wheelbarrows and uncut nails.
Hey!
And,
Bruh, that's Christmas, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of the year. Still, the conversation is one based upon, we obviously have to see, because supposedly, I had to also sign up for that public-private forum participation thing as well.
Oh, yeah, the discussion is, the discussion is coming.
It's still coming. So, I'd like to see what will emanate from that conversation. Because there's been a lot of these conferences and stuff. Look, I'm always looking for the people that sit with the knowledge of how to do business. The guys that always don't have that much to say, unfortunately, that have the very basic things to say. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, public sector.
No, it's the biggest.
Are always the public representatives. I'm not talking about the ministers. I mean, the executive directors can talk a lot. I'm talking about the guys that the executive directors send in their place. The guys just come say, yes, I will only end it this full stop on my paper. And then it stops and you go like, aish, brah. What's going on here?
5 minutes of protocol observed and 2 minutes of...
Well, you know, we're going to send a report that no one should see to our presidents. Yeah, that's what it's about.
Yeah, that brings us to the end of Monday Home Run. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From yours truly here, you'll have a good Monday evening.
On my side, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your Monday in our company. Obviously, stay tuned for the PES, and we'll see each other again tomorrow.